Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back to rewind this episode of Survivor 46. I'm excited because we have some good stuff coming your way, as you can tell by Gabe, Soda, and Michaela on the cover of this week's episode.
Yeah, this is an interesting week. Obviously, we're talking about episode several, both the name of the episode and the joke, the fact that it's the seventh episode of the season.
Yes.
McKenna, how did you feel about this episode? Because this is something we've seen several times now. It's almost predictable at this point, I would say.
Not quite seven.
Yes, technically only six times in a row. Six times in a row. But... I had to double check my math there. This is something we're used to at this point. We expect this post-merge
kind of still tribal thing.
Yeah. How did you feel about it this time compared to instances in the past where it's happened?
I feel like this time it was a little bit more dynamic, where we had a little bit more of relationships coming into play here, where it wasn't just like straight up, this is who's going home. We had a little bit of chaos and scramble and like multiple names thrown out. So I thought it was a good episode, but like, again, I'm tired of the format because, all right, mergatory, breaking up into two tribes, then we get a merge.
Really interesting, because I haven't really thought about this until literally right this moment. And one of the things that happened throughout the history of Survivor is the merge expanded, right? We get to a point where, obviously, in the first few seasons of the show, 10 people emerge. And then we expand that. When was the first expanded merge? Help me out here. What was the first expanded merge?
What do you mean?
The first merge with more than 10 people.
Well, Cambodia was like the biggest merge.
Yeah, Cambodia was the first time that they merged at 13.
And like they've kind of stuck to 13.
Kind of. But if we look at the last,
pre new era was like a lot of 13s, or like 12, then Edge of Extinction brings you back up to 13.
Right. So technically speaking, 13 tends to be the moment where everyone ends up on the same beach, I think is the good way to look at it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if we look at it as the mergatory vote, only half of the tribe is able to be voted for. It's kind of people complain about it a lot, is the fact that it's kind of a tribe swap. And mm-hmm. then because we, especially in the last couple of seasons, we've been doing the split right after that vote at final 12. It's again kind of another tribe swap. We're really just merging at 10 again. When you come down, you think about it. Like when we really get down to it, because we don't get a pure merge vote until final 10. We're just merging at 10 again, like we were all the way back at the beginning of the series.
Yeah, I don't hate the 10, but like there is still, you know, that one person who sort of doesn't get to play the merge that makes the jury, but is also merged because they get to meet everyone. So it's kind of very like,
it's weird,
discombobulating. The Mergatory and this episode, I think, are some of our hardest like to compare things to, because do we relate it to a tribal phase section? Do we relate it to a merge point in the game? Like it's very hard to discern which way to go. And so I feel like we have a good smattering of merge and pre-merge examples for our moments this week.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of it also comes down to the fact this is the seventh episode of the season, obviously as referenced by the name. And in other seasons, the seventh episode of the season is prior to the merge. And it's not that these seasons are shorter than other seasons. It's not that the other seasons are longer or anything like that. But what it is we had so many seasons starting at 20 people for so long, that seventh episode was still pre-merge because we weren't eliminating it. And I think when we look at it now and we see that we're starting with 18 castaways almost every season, is starting with 18 castaways now. I think it's pretty safe to say that at this point. When you get to seven and it's post-merge, or at least it's in the jury phase of the game, it plays out quite similarly to other episode sevens in the past.
Yeah, it really does. And so that's why we're watching an episode seven over on the Patreon. We have Millennials versus Gen X coming your way. I Will Destroy You. So that's episode seven of season 33. So become a patron. The link is right on the screen right here. So please become a patron. You get so much content, not just our rewind, but Cinema Specialist, Amazing Race. Phil has got a lot of things. Every season matters. There's a lot going on.
There is. So before we start diving into this episode with our outwit, outplay, and outlast, everyone, make sure you like the video and subscribe to the channel if you haven't. We did finally
several hit likes, several subscribes. Likes.
Yeah. We would appreciate that. We finally hit 10,500 subscribers, but Phil wants us to keep driving that number up. So keep on doing it. We appreciate you all so much for tuning in. Let's get into this. McKenna, what's our outwit moment this time?
All right, outwit. We are going breaking tribal lines and not just doing the obvious boot. So here we have Tim and Soda going home. But we're mainly focusing on Soda here, where like you have the majority Nami, and the main people on the fence here are Soda and Venus. And Charlie is just like the obvious name that is being thrown out to kind of mirage the plans of either Soda or Venus.
Yeah, here is this is an interesting thing, because again, this feels more like a pre-merge moment than it does a merge moment here, because essentially this is the outcome we usually see in a swap. In fact, both of our examples are swap moments that pertain like to similar situations like this. It's so interesting because in these instances, it tends to be a tribe that was winning a lot that didn't have an opportunity to vote anyone out. And now they're just like chomping at the bit and have this opportunity to thin themselves out because they're growing irritated with each other. And now, granted, people are quite friendly this early in the game. And it's one of these things that happens in the shorter game, I think, where people aren't quite tired of it. And it's kind of one of the refreshing things about season 46 is seeing how, and it gets 45 to an extent too, right? Like 45, we saw it with people growing tired of Bruce, or at least we saw confessionals about people growing tired with Bruce. And in 46, we're seeing it a lot of that talk with about Venus. And we're even seeing that talk about everyone else on NAMI as well, right? Hunter last week referenced Liz hates Soda, Soda hates Venus, and like everyone hates each other on the NAMI tribe. So when we get into it here, this is something we've seen over and over again in Survivor, but it feels refreshing because we've had so many seasons of people seemingly just really liking each other for a long time now.
Yeah. So we chose two tribal phase moments here, and I'll start off with mind first. So we have the Gabe boot in Marquesas, where all of original Row 2 turn on Gabe and save the Mata Amu in Boston Rob V and Sean, because Gabe was just vibing. He was here for the social experiment of it all and didn't really care about voting or wanting to vote. So he wasn't going to strategize. And he was that wild card that they just wanted to eliminate from the game and eliminate from question. So we have that relation. I believe people were talking about Tim as like the vibes guy pre-season of like social experiment of it all. And then with Soda, he was just that like person from a majority that they all decided to target and get out of the game.
It's really interesting, like Gabe, and I'm going to be a bit of a Gabe defender here. And you know what? If you want to hear more conversations about Gabe, head on over to the Patreon, listen to Every Season's Matter, because Phil, Will, and Blake have been going on about Marquesas this month. And it's definitely worth a listen to, but I recently watched Marquesas. Marquesas is actually one of the more the most recent season outside of 46 that I've watched of Survivor. In fact, I'm like partway through that rewatch still. But Gabe, this target of Gabe here is very interesting, because a lot of people kind of accredit to the fact that he like makes this comment about, I'm here for the social experiment, I'm not here for the game of it all. And that is a comment that is made in that episode. I'm not going to defend him there, but at the beginning of the episode, he's talking about how he's making these human connections with Rob V and Sean. And that's really what's driving him here. And he doesn't want to just pick them off because they have a majority.
Yeah.
That's the real interesting thing about this Gabe situation. And in fact, in this episode, this is the first episode where Rox is mentioned in Survivor history, because obviously the rule of Rox changed. There's a conversation between Gabe and John where they mention at a tiebreak, they go to Rox. And that is ultimately what actually drives this flip on Gabe here. It was to avoid Rox.
Yeah, because if Gabe somehow flips in with the old Mata Amus, then that's 4v4, and that's not good for the old Row 2 members. And it's, you bring up the human connection of it all, and that's actually the topic of the digging deeper, I'm pretty sure, as well.
Yeah.
So like Phil and Blake discuss that human connection that you see Kenzie and Ben have. And like Gabe is also just trying to have that human connection with people, but you know, it doesn't bear fruit for him as much as it did for Ben.
Yeah. And of course, like the interesting thing when we compare this moment in Marquesas to 46 is that in 46, NAMI taking out one of their own drastically diminishes their power in the game overall, right? We now are down to 4 NAMI, 3 Siga, and 3... Wow, McKenna, help me out. What is this last tribe that we spent so much time with in 46?
Yanu,
thank you. Yep, that one. Like, the one we've been talking about all season.
I'm in a little like pastel 46 colors here.
And then we have in Marquesas, getting rid of Gabe here didn't really change the balance of power.
No, because it was the 4 of John Carroll, my girl Tammy, Zoe, and the general. Like they were the 4 with Gabe just hanging out. So it still made it 4 lockstep versus 3. So there really wasn't any question now on who could go home.
And the swap in Marquesas was really weird because the swap in Marquesas was the uneven swap where they kept the numbers the same on the tribes that were named that and just shuffled people around. But what we saw was the one tribe, McKenna, you have to help me out here. What was that tribe again?
Mar'amu or Rotu?
Rotu, the one with, the one with more power. Yes, Rotu got the majority on both of these swap tribes because of it. And because of that, they just had so much power in this game. And based on what we had seen previously in Survivor, they can gain that. And they can get rid of Gabe here pretty safely. Honestly, getting rid of Gabe here might have been the demise of the Rotu 4. But who that's knows? A whole other topic.
We'll put a pin in that topic and pull out the pin for yours. John, let's talk your outwit moment.
I think one of the bigger moments here is we're going to go to the Millennials versus Gen X swap, because that's one of the most interesting swaps where the majority votes out one of their own numbers in each of those three post-swap tribal councils. But if we're talking about any of them in comparison to this episode, there's only one we can really talk about. It's the one that we are talking about on the Patreon.
Biggie.
It is absolutely Michaela Bradshaw's boot, because there are more parallels, not just within the fact that Michaela goes because she's being flipped on from her other millennials. It's also the fact that she's targeted because she's this seen as this big threat, and she really emerges as a big threat here in this episode, and of course we get that from Jay's perspective. And then we also have a "it was you, wasn't it" in this episode 46, so we can't not talk about this, right? Like,
yeah,
it's similar. Obviously, when Soda does it, it's a reference back to when Venus said it after the previous tribal council. But we have a moment here, and we also haven't talked about this tribal council somehow in the last three seasons.
Yeah, I mean, no moment. We were waiting for this moment.
Exactly.
We do go a lot more in depth. We're still going to talk about it, but we do go a lot more in depth over on the Patreon, so please become a patron. Our rewind is at the $10 tier, so become a $10 patron to listen to all this. But, you know, you can also become a $20 patron. There's more content. You can get all the content for a $20 patron. But, yes, this Michaela boot is just one of the most iconic Survivor boots. When you think of tribal councils, like, Michaela lives, eats, sleeps, breathes tribal council gold. So just the fact of her getting blindsided here when, like, basically preaching her loyalty through seashell and then turns around and gets blindsided seemingly out of nowhere, because we have no content of Jay and Will talking to Brett and Sunday. It's just like, this is just a beautiful moment. I think just the episode in general is good, and I can't wait till I get to my rewatch of Millennials versus Gen X. I still got a little bit of ways to go, but it just reminds me why Millennials versus Gen X is a good season, and it was also my first season live. So like, it brought back all the feels.
I think one of the big things here, and that's really interesting when we compare this Michaela boot to the Soda boot, is Michaela is really focused because she emerges as a strategic threat as she's outlining everything with the rocks and the seashells. And she's also very clearly a physical threat. And Jay mentions both of those when he says...
And Michaela mentions it herself, too.
Yeah, I mean, Michaela is just a winner, as she states in that episode. But when we look at Soda, the threat that Soda poses is the other point of the triangle, right? The social aspect, where Tevin's scared because of how well Soda connects with people. And even though we are shown, you know, Soda being not so tolerant of Venus because she's bugging her and everything, one thing I've noticed in these last couple of episodes, Soda and Venus are still talking quite a bit. No, they don't seem to be...
You're talking about terms. Not talking.
Yeah, but, like, it's not... It doesn't feel like she's ever completely closing Venus off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously we had that conversation early on when Soda's like, oh, I can't talk to you today because of like, everyone's like not liking you anymore. But Soda still had enough social game to keep enough conversation where her and Venus can have this talk after Venus accuses her of voting for her. And it's just really interesting how strong Soda's social game is and how fearful of it Tevin is.
Yeah, because it would have been interesting to see if Michaela like had survived and like, you know, Brett and Sunday joined up with like Michaela and Hannah or something, how if that worked and Jay tried to flip on Michaela, how Michaela would have dealt with that afterward. Mm-hmm. Because like Venus confronts Soda about it, but like it seemed semi-reasonable where like Michaela would be off the handle.
Yeah. And the interesting, and what I really think is fascinating about this is this comparison between Tevin and Jay. Because I think at this point, this was the point in Millennials versus Gen X where everyone was like, okay, maybe Jay like can win this game.
Mm-hmm.
He's savvy enough. He knows what he's doing. This seems like a big move. It doesn't seem like a big move for the sake of a big move. It more seems like a preservation move from Jay and a longevity move where he's really fearful of what Michaela can do further on. Tevin does say in this episode that he wants to make a big move. And that is really what's inspiring him to do this here. He also has the opportunity to take it here. Mm-hmm. Tevin's seems more like a resume building move.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the differences are. But in the end, it's both of them being like, I don't know if I can beat this person in the end. And now is my opportunity. So I need to take it while I have as few variables playing into it as possible.
Yeah, exactly. I think both these boots are really good for this episode for Outwit. But let's go on to Outplay now. We are going to talk holding out for food for the tribe. So in this immunity challenge, the person who lasted the longest would have food for, would win food for their tribe. And we've seen this some other times before. So I'm going to go with my moment in Heroes versus Villains, which is slightly different. It is in the tribal phase. So Candace and Boston Rob are the winners for the heroes and the villains in the immunity challenge. They have individual immunity, similar to what we see in 46. And then they go on to do a second portion of the challenge to win food for them that they will then eat at Tribal Council.
Yeah, this is kind of the old school way I think we think of these challenges going, where the one tribe wins food and then sits there in Tribal Council and watches the first Tribal Council and then gets to do their own Tribal Council. What was interesting while we were doing our research for this, McKenna, is that we found out that a lot of these earlier instances in the show didn't have the individual immunity aspect of this. And it was a lot of just like tribal. Tribe was
funny, yeah.
It was just the tribe. It was more of a reward challenge than it was.
Well, if it did have the individual immunity portion, it didn't have the food. And we were like, gosh darn it. Like, it felt more common than I actually thought. So it has like, where, you know, this moment Heroes versus Villains, it's a completely separate challenge rather than just holding out the challenge that you're currently doing.
Yeah. And the real interesting thing about this Heroes, I mean, this Heroes versus Villain episode is pretty iconic, right? It's the episode where Tyson goes home after eating the hot dogs, Tribal Council and everything. And Rob probably saves himself by winning this individual immunity as well.
Yeah.
But this food, like the food aspect of this is really interesting, especially when you're eating it in front of the other tribe or Tribal Council.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like psychological warfare in a sense.
Especially when, I'm going to shout out another amazing season, Cook Islands, when you can steal someone over to like eat.
Yeah, absolutely. But but my instance is actually a little different because mine is not for food. And this is the first time, I'm pretty sure, the first time that we have a post-merge, or the second time we have a post-merge splitting of the tribe and two separate tribal councils. The first obviously being in Fiji. We've talked about that episode before and how much we don't like the outcome of it. But I want to go to Ghost Island. And this is the challenge where the tribe gets split into two and they have to hold up the ball with that that lever and hold it shut. So it's another endurance challenge similar to 46. And not the same challenge, obviously, but
yep.
Similar concept. And we have Jenna and Michael come out. And what they're doing is they are holding on that extra bit after they win. This is the vote out of Jenna and Michael. They don't win. But this is the one where the person who wins and lasts the longest on this endurance challenge, their group gets to go second. And because it's in the post-merge, that means they get to see who's on the jury. This is the same thing we saw in...
Jenna turns around and Jeff is just like, actually, can you go sit on that bench? And that would be so jarring for me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not the place you want to be for sure. And we don't... And which is kind of... Again, that is kind of what is happening in 46 too, right? The winning tribe gets to go second. But instead of seeing who's voted out first and reacting to it, which is what we saw in 42. And it drastically probably changed that vote too in 42. Mm-hmm. And instead, what we see is, and it's the same thing that happened in 45, where the first tribe votes someone out. That person is not on the jury. Mm-hmm. And then the second tribe gets that jury. So it's kind of similar in that sense.
Yeah.
But the advantage of seeing who's voted out is so huge. It can change everything. And I think it gives an opportunity for a live tribal, which I know Survivor really liked in the late 30s. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of gone away from them now. We haven't had Sure. Yeah, it's fine. But if they want one, that's how you do it. Throw someone, like, if you do the split, throw that first person voted out on the jury so everyone sees who it is. And then all of a sudden, everyone has to decide how they're doing it.
I don't get to decompress. I have to get thrown into another tribal council. Like, for me as a person voted out in, like, Jenna's spot, terrible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, terrible. I don't disagree. But at the same time, that's a bigger advantage than food. And I understand why there was no food involved with this Ghost Island example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So we ready to go to Outlast?
Yeah, let's Outlast a little bit.
All right. Outlast. We have a fun one. A game during the challenge. And this was such a fun moment of doing the alphabet game inside the challenge, but nobody got that you needed to do, like, all right, A is for blank, then the next person needed to do A is for blank, B is for blank, and then continue on. They just were like gonna name A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And it's just such a, like, does that happen more often than we are shown? Like, do they get the BS bantering between people? Because it's like not as much as we might have thought, but they just might cut it out or fast forward or silence or something like that.
Yeah, it's one of those things that maybe the fact that we have 90 minutes is the reason we're seeing these. We've definitely seen them before. But I don't think we really spend as much time on them as we do here. And now, granted, that could be because Q's reaction to this is so funny. Charlie trolling Q about it, even funnier. I definitely get why this segment is in this episode. It's so much fun. But you have to imagine on these endurance challenges, someone saying something fairly frequently, or at least, like, there's no way some of these longer challenges, like, the endurance challenge that ends Palau, that lasts like 12 hours. Mm-hmm. There's no way they're just sitting there in silence that entire time.
True. Well, you know, one challenge that does not have silence T-Bird, When It Rains, It Pours, in Africa. She is singing Tomorrow, Till the Cows Come Home, and she is giving her best rendition of Annie. And then she even plays a game of rock, paper, scissors versus Clarence to try and see who wins the immunity challenge. Like, just this, like, distraction from the challenge could throw you off, because if you're standing there with your arm up and then T-Bird just starts going Tomorrow and you're like, what? And then there you go, there's the water. So I just love the hijinks during the challenge.
It's really interesting because this isn't the first example that we see of this. There's an instance in Borneo where Rich is singing 99 bottles of beer on the wall.
Someone beat you to your moment.
I know. It's throwing me off here. We're going to get there. But with T-Bird, it's so interesting because, and it's really interesting when you think about this approach to an endurance challenge at all, because a lot of people, some people prefer that focus, right? That mental focus, that mental fortitude of focusing on whatever they're doing, whatever their thoughts are doing, maybe turning their brain off. When someone is singing a song like T-Bird is, and T-Bird chose a song that was, I don't know if everyone remembers this, Annie was really big with the revival of it in 1999 and everything. It was quite popular. So everyone knows Tomorrow.
And yeah, I was three, so I did not know that fun fact, but thank you, John.
There you go. Well, making me feel old, that's fine. But the big thing is, because everyone knows the song, it can be really distracting. It's hard to tune out the world around you. Mm-hmm. And when it's something familiar and it's creeping in, that's when you can lose focus. So it's not just a way that T-Bird is passing the time. Mm-hmm. It's also a way that I don't know if she had this intent. Maybe she probably said it somewhere in like one of her like talking with T-Birds at some point. Mm-hmm. But the fact that this could throw someone off, it's almost conniving and sinister in a way.
T-Bird sinister? No.
Well, I mean, Last Pro beat me to it. This is in fact my moment. I am talking about Christian Hubicki in David vs. Goliath because his stories, I think, were quite similar. And while it's not as interactive as what we see in 46 with Q trying to get everyone participating, mm-hmm. it feels like it has that same energy, because it feels like where Charlie's trolling Q about it and everything, I feel like the people in David versus Goliath were just like not cool with Christian talking nonstop about, he talks about a Reuben sandwich at one point, doesn't he?
Yeah, like he talks about literally everything and anything. And I think like, just he said it before, like, I have 5 hours of Jeff Probst's undivided attention. I'm not gonna not use that. And so he just talked and talked, and like, it could be, it's a strategy to get people to drop, because it's like, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah, and it feels like one of those moments where you can really goad the person who's doing it too, because with Christian, I don't think there is malice intent with it at all. I think Christian's literally just trying to focus on anything other than the pain he is feeling in his body at this moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you let your mouth run at a million miles a minute, you can do that. But honestly, if I was there, I would just be asking Christian questions so much, just to, again, to troll everyone else. I'd be Charlie, but instead of trolling the person who's trying to do things, I'd be trolling everyone else in the challenge.
If I was on the sit-out bench and Christian just kept talking, I'd be asking him like questions to keep going, to be like, so what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah.
I mean, Reuben sandwich? No. It's all about this sandwich, and just like get them going on different things, because it would be hilarious to just like mess with the other castaways because they're like, you know, or something like that. So it would be fun to just get Christian and Vicky on a roll talking.
And I think what's really fun about these moments, especially in the new era, and I think what was really fun about this moment in 46, this is a human moment. Like, yeah, it's sillier, it's goofier, but it's also a TV moment. It's one of those moments that sometimes I think we lose in the new era of Survivor because everyone feels really game body and we don't have those early reality TV personalities as much anymore.
Yeah.
This feels like a moment, and I'll just bring it up because I just watched the Challenge All-Stars 4 because it started this week. And there are moments in that where it's very clear these people were on reality TV in a time where you were trying to make yourself seen on reality TV and the way they react to each other and the way they give confessionals. That's what this moment feels like. This is a TV moment where we have a cast doing something that has to be aired because it's so entertaining.
Yeah.
And we've been so lacking in moments like that in Survivor in recent years. It was so nice to see.
Yeah, I agree. You're right. It has this moment of like, we can't not see this because it's just making Q, like just the fact that Q was doing it, I feel like it made it all the more better because he's like, guys, why aren't you getting this? Like, I don't understand. Just the way he was frustrated with it was just so funny.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think that sums it up for this episode though, McKenna.
That does. So, John, what is going on in Specialist Universe this week?
Why, we have a lot going on because we always have a lot going on these days. If you haven't checked out the recap, Phil and Will did a recap on Wednesday. We had Digging Deeper yesterday where Phil and Will talked about human moments and human relationships in Survivor and how they impact the game. McKenna and Phil also recapped this week's episode of The Amazing Race yesterday. So check that out if you haven't already. This Sunday, we have our predictions and power rankings for the upcoming episode 8. And Phil and Will are going to be joined by J.D. Robinson, who we at The Specialist adore, obviously, because he was a specialist prior to going on the island. We really like those people. Monday, Phil and I, as the cinema specialist, will be coming at you with two Alex Garland movies. We're going to be talking 28 Days Later and Sunshine, the latter of which is probably one of the most underrated science fiction movies of all time. Tuesday, Phil and Will will be back discussing Deal or No Deal Island. Wednesday will be the episode 8 recap with Phil and Will, and then Thursday McKenna and Phil are back with The Amazing Race, and Phil and Blake will be joined by Brandon Donlan to discuss something that happened in the next week's episode of Survivor. And then of course we're back here next Friday. We'll be a little earlier than usual, so make sure you like the video and subscribe so you know we're going live next Friday.
Yes. All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in, and we will talk to you next week or over on the Patreon right now. Goodbye.